Anna Diamond, a very good morning to you. How are you?
And to you, sure. You know, it's so bad, this lockdown, that I didn't even realize today was a public holiday.
I know, it's very confusing. It really
You
really
fooled
is.
Me, Howard. You fooled me.
I didn't. It really is a public holiday. Hold on, it is, isn't it?
It is.
You see,
are you guys hunting Easter eggs in the studio?
Of course. Of course.
Hey, Sadika.
Yeah, we haven't found any, Easter but eggs. We are hunting them.
Keep looking.
Right. Exactly. So how was your Pesach?
You know, it's been awesome. It's very different. You know, it really gives you a sense of appreciation for family and, for what we normally take for granted. I think it's just really like, Howard, in your words, it's unprecedented.
No, it's not. That's not my words.
No, don't use that word, sis.
I'm done with unprecedented.
Yeah. No, I just think it is giving everyone a new view of sort of their realities, of their lives, of the appreciation that they need to have for their family and of normality. Yeah, because you are reassessing and literally every single day when you think something's different, I think people have to like reassess what's going on. And yeah, I guess again, when the president came and told us that the lockdown again, which most of us didn't even know straight away, had been extended, you have to sort of again recalibrate your reality. So it's been very interesting, but it's been a good Pesach. I can't complain.
Look, for us as well, certainly I've enjoyed it. And even the 3 days I enjoyed, I thought I would have killed somebody, or somebody would have killed me. I think they were as worried as I was, but, it really was great. We played a lot of games with the kids. I read a fortune. We just had time to sit and chat. Our kids, participated in the Seder in a very different way because, suddenly they were called on to do so and they couldn't hide
behind 5,000 other people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. 30 other family members that are there. So it was very different. And, you know, it's interesting because it's not something that you can ever replicate.
It's very unique.
Yet it was good. I even watched a great movie Saturday night, Jojo Rabbit, and I'm urging everybody to get hold of it and just watch that because that was incredible. I never have time to do these things, watch documentaries, read more books than, you know, I'm going through at least a book a day and it's phenomenal.
Sure. That is amazing. And I must say, I've also done, also played with the kids also, and they also engage in the Seder, which is also, they normally like run and escape while they know they can. they really enjoyed it. And, it was actually fun. It really, really was. And also, again, also reading, I don't know if you've seen Unorthodox yet on Netflix.
So I haven't. I've seen all the controversy around it and I keep thinking, should I watch it or not? And I haven't. Have you watched it?
I actually have, also only last week. It said the main actress is the little girl, from Stiesel. And she's excellent. I really think it's excellent. Yes, it's completely controversial, but it was really good.
Well, just give our listeners a view, a sense of what it's about.
So Unorthodox is about this girl that grows up in Williamsburg in New York in a very from very religious, sort of very dogmatic family. And then gets married and then she decides that this life is not for her. She wants to escape and it's all about her trying to leave the community. So it is controversial, but I thought it was excellent. It was very, very good.
Yeah. I see a lot of controversy around it in terms of, well, does that represent, is it accurate? Does it represent that whole community? But it is a slice of it and nothing can, no movie and no story can ever represent absolutely every aspect of everything. And
absolutely.
I mean,
it's
I haven't
story.
Seen it, but then it's my choice to either see it or not see it. And I think that we are maybe a little sensitive around it. What I have noticed as well is we've got this whole shift on social media happening during COVID-19. A lot of people are obviously, we've spoken about the Zoom calls and the lectures and that type of thing. But there's also been, you know, a lot of people are playing the piano or singing something, putting it on social media or having a live concert in there from their living room. And then there's been this explosion of TikTok, which I have to say I'm still not on, but I'm just seeing a lot about it. What's your sense of what's happening up?
Yeah, so basically, I know my kids are completely and utterly obsessed with TikTok and completely obsessed with all of these sort of social media. There's something called Squad. There's House Party. Zoom
calls.
Yes,
what is House Party? So, Nati, have I seen you? Are you involved in House Party?
No, I'm not, and I don't want to. A friend of mine was like, it is so intrusive. He's just like, he can't.
What is it?
So people get on like a, is it like a chat, like a video call? And like, but now the thing is that anybody, if you don't lock your party,
anybody can come in.
Anybody can come in. That's the thing. Anyone that's in your contacts can come in.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And then is a watch party different to a house party?
I think a watch party is just, I think, isn't it mainly like DJs?
I don't know. Everyone's invited me to watch parties and I don't even know what they're asking me to watch with them.
So it's like if we're watching a performance. So a lot of DJs.
But why do people want me to watch it with them?
I don't know. But they kind of, you know, it's because you kind of feel like you're in a concert. You're in a, you know,
so
you're at an event.
So they want me as part of the audience.
It's also about social cohesion.
I'm not a lot of fun.
You're not alone.
Because
you collectively
I'm not somebody you want
something.
At a concert necessarily.
Wow, Howard.
No.
Wow.
Oh, Madeline. Madeline says also you need to watch One of Us on Netflix. Madeline, I hated it. Madeline, I don't know. My wife was very into One of Us. And I said to her, you know, one day, like she was watching it. And I said, if I wanted to go downstairs and watch the family, that's what I could do. I feel like it's not a movie. It's just watching a family. Wow. It's just like watching my family. Like, I don't want to have to do that.
Wow.
Clive says TikTok is Chinese. Yes, I know that it is. So wait. So Dina, I've confused myself now. just tell me what these things are. Like what TikTok.
Okay.
Let's go back to TikTok.
And so let me tell you that TikTok is essentially, it started out as actually, yes, it is Chinese. But it did start out as like watching music videos. It was the next evolution of Musical.ly. So do you remember there used to be songs and people would like lip sync the songs and pretend they were ones doing it and whatever. Mm. Now, TikTok is the next evolution. There's actually, I mean, it is the craziest thing, but there's a 15-year-old in the States. Her name is Charlie D'Amelio, and she has over 46 million followers globally. 46 million followers.
Million.
And what does she do?
Yeah.
She creates a little 15-second little dance. It's not even a dance. It's more the hands and moves or whatever, the top part of her body. And all of a sudden, you've got millions of teenagers and younger than that, actually, running around the world doing these dances. In fact, my children, you think they've actually got a condition, because all they actually do is their hands are consistently moving. Whether they're lying down, sitting, whatever, they are just moving on the TikTok dances.
That's unbelievable.
It's crazy, actually.
And how do these people make money on TikTok? Is it the same as YouTube where a certain amount of followers and then there's advertising and they make money from that?
Absolutely. So every single post I think that this Charlie does is, I think she gets about $25,000.
Unbelievable.
I mean, it's crazy. So it's a video sharing social networking service, but it was founded in Beijing in 2012, but again, it used to be sort of, it's a whole evolution, and now the whole world has gone mad. And I think because kids are home, that they have actually now got the time, and they've got something else. And it's
because they didn't have a lot of time to spend on screens before this.
yes, they were very limited.
Thank goodness they've now found the time. And now parents are saying, go, screens, go. Go and get your, where's your screen?
Listen, the way I look at it is actually you don't have to do dance videos because there is some activity involved in it. So
exactly.
I'm not totally against it, I must be honest.
Right.
But I'll tell you what else, sorry. And that also, there's a million people that just not, it's not even just necessarily dancers. People are putting up now, you would actually love it, you have to download it. Mm. They actually are putting up like crazy videos of jumping off like rocks, like 5,000 meters up in the sky, okay, not that high.
And just right.
Obviously
editing.
Into,
yeah.
And the editing involved in that, like for like a second, 15-second video, you know, people will put in like 4 hours of editing. It's crazy.
Yeah, but I must say it is addictive because once you start watching, the videos just roll. So one after the other. So once you watch one and all the stars are on it and the celebs, except no one's as famous as this Charlie 15-year-old, D'Amelio. That it literally gives them huge street cred. But the videos that roll are anything from dogs to activities to adventure, to baking. It actually, and it just, you just sit there watching and then you realize half an hour hour later.
Well, and baking's become a huge thing during the lockdown as well. Banana bread being huge.
Massive. We've done banana bread, I must say.
Right. Yes, of course.
My kids wanted to bake the other day. I was like, but now it's Pesach. And yeah. I was like, what are we going to do?
Exactly. Fairly limited. Well, I can tell you that I saw our bunch were doing potato latkes yesterday.
Yes, potato. I'm planning on a potato kugel today, I think.
Oh, very
good. Going to live on the edge. Although I didn't have to actually have a braai last night because it was like, it makes it feel like it's not as Pesach.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. All right. I also want to chat to you about how different countries have dealt with COVID-19, because it's all about marketing. Well, it's not all about marketing. There's the laws and the essence of how they deal with it.
Those little things, yeah.
Yes, but then there's the public side of it. And I've been to date very, very impressed how South Africa's dealing with it. I think our president is speaking magnificently. We've got this they've developed trust in that we believe the information that they are giving us. We're not doubting a lot of it. But not every country is like that. What's your sense of how different countries are dealing with this? Because this is a crisis that will test them down to their core, any government.
Listen, absolutely. And I think, yes, it is actually a case of even marketing, because the way every government has sort of communicated with their own populations and the restrictions and what they've actually done to protect their people has created a huge brand within their own country and a sense of security and a sense of believability within their greater population. So if you look at countries, and there's actually a whole bunch of polls that have been done around this. So if you look at China and how they originally started dealing with it, and now they're lauded in terms of their approach because they've got to their no new cases and it's under control and they've gone back to work. And there's a whole sense of, wow, China were amazing and they really behaved properly. But then I actually read something in the Harvard Business Review yesterday that was talking about China and the different reactions and the different countries. And China, yes, obviously now have got it under control because they actually introduced draconian measures once they realized how absolutely deadly the virus was and the effect it was having on the country. But with that being said, there is also authoritative and compelling evidence, which includes a study from the University of Southampton that says, and I quote, if interventions in China had been conducted 3 weeks earlier, transmission of COVID-19 could have been reduced by 95%. I mean, that's a proper statement.
That's a big number.
That's crazy.
Hey? Wow.
Yeah, that's a damning statement on the Chinese government.
Yeah, look, we're seeing a lot of they've got no credibility at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, again, they've got it under control, but they were welding people into their buildings and they were on full lock, which literally was draconian measures. And also only after that spread had started. And also it was after the Chinese New Year. It was after people had already left, the country, which had gone to Italy, which became the new epicenter, to actually incubate the disease. And if they had actually called it earlier, there wouldn't have been those flights going out. There wouldn't have been the Chinese nationals leaving. And even the whistleblowers, so there was originally that Dr. Li Wenliang, who actually has passed since, he actually was called in, and him and eight other doctors were called in to stop spreading false news and fake news in late December. And there was another doctor, Dr. A. Fen, and they literally were called in and interrogated and charged for creating false news and panic. Yeah,
because they were desperate to control the narrative themselves, the government.
Absolutely. And it's all about controlling the data, all about controlling the narrative. And only on the 23rd of January did they actually start announcing steps to start with quarantine. So it really, really, from the Chinese government, was not their best showing. But with that being said, countries like Singapore, Taiwan took immediate measures as soon as they were aware of it and actually curbed the spread in their own countries. So that, to their credit, was actually very good. But then also, I mean, if you look at Israel, what they were doing, their steps, their macro decisions were right on originally about COVID-19, and they were seen as being quite extreme and quite also harsh in terms of the original quarantine and all of that. But now they're starting to see, I think with what you were talking about with Anthony Reif, there is that perception on the religious communities that they were late to pick up that this actually is a real threat.